Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, thanks for taking the time to downloading Real Sports Talk Radio. I am Randy Zelia. Before we get to the show, don't forget, if you ever want to have your own podcast/radio show, you can go to blogtalkradio.com. That's right, go to blogtalkradio.com and start your own podcast or web show through Blog Talk Radio. And this is how you can do it. Just go there, go to sign up on the right-hand corner, and then they have packages. They have the small, the medium, the large, and the enterprise packages. And the small packages start as low as $39 a month. You get a 30-day free trial just by putting in the code BACKSPORTSPAGE. And what you get for that 30-day free trial? Access to exclusive training. You have 2-hour daily shows, 50 live co-current callers, 1,000 promotional impressions, primetime scheduling. You can connect with Skype, upload and edit replaced episodes, enhanced reporting, and priority support. Go to blogtalkradio.com. You can start your own podcast today for as low as $39 a month on blogtalkradio.com. Check that out. But for now, enjoy the show. All right, Real Sports Talk Radio, thanks for taking a few minutes of your week to download the show. My name is Randy Zelia. I am a podcaster. I am a marketeering guy, I guess you can call me, a marketer. I'm a promoter. I'm a guy who loves his friends, a guy who loves doing these shows for you once a week, an entertainer, a guy who likes to make you laugh, and most of all, I am the guy who loves doing the stuff with BackSportsPage.com, Real Sports Talk Radio. Check out all the shows through the Back Sports Page podcast network. Mondays is Seth and Sean. New episodes of Seth and Sean Sports drop every Monday. Every Tuesday, you have Beyond the Benches with Ryan Stern. Wednesdays, you got me. You got me here. New episodes of Real Sports Talk Radio drop at night. For those who don't know, I'll tell you what my show is about briefly. Thursday night, The Right Way with Malik Wright. Fridays, From the Touchline in Seattle, our soccer show. And coming back Sunday soon will be Under the Hoodies with Bill Kegel. He'll be back. Again, you're listening to Real Sports Talk Radio. Back Sports Page produces this show. And what you get on this show, again, you get me, who's hosting. I usually have some sort of cast of characters with me. Feeling a little lonely right now. Might be getting a call from somebody in a few minutes to keep me company until the special interview time. But what you get here on Real Sports Talk Radio is you get once a week you get me sitting down, talking with someone either live or I pre-taped an interview with someone who works in this industry, and we discuss the behind-the-scenes aspect. We talk about the real aspect of the game or the industry. Tonight, the owner and founder of Global Force Wrestling, Jeff Jarrett. For those who don't know, I am a big wrestling fan. Never hiding that. I've always been a very big WWE fan since I was 9 years old. Jeff Jarrett is a guy who I grew up watching. And this was taped a few weeks back. It was a very good interview. I spoke with Jeff about Global Force Wrestling, his time in WCW, his time in WWE, his time in TNA. We also spoke about his relationship with the late, great Owen Hart, his relationship with Vince McMahon, and also his feelings on Chris Benoit, what his death and the way his tragedy turned out, what it did for the business, and how he felt about it. This was, again, taped a little while ago. So it was a very, very good show, very good interview. This is one of those interviews I come on the air and I say I'm very proud of a lot of different interviews. This is another one that I'm very proud of. I sat down. I really did a good job. I'm just really not big with doing the prep work with these interviews. I just love doing it and seeing where it goes. I feel you can do more with a conversation with somebody. Look, like when you're going to sit down and do an interview, you're not going to sit there and just say this, and not respond to the questions, respond to the answers to the questions. You have to be able to do that. Real quick, opening bell was brought to you by NFLShop.com. And of course, that's our first segment, our first little plug here, NFLShop.com. Support your team and get all the on and off the field gear favorite players wear on NFLShop.com. Use keywords back sports. Sit and save a couple bucks, and you help this show out by keeping it free every single week. Go to NFLShop.com/sports. You can get the same gear that the players wear, whether it's jerseys, hats, sweatshirts, T-shirts, you know, sunglasses, different type of novelty items, all the stuff that the team has, you can have too. NFLShop.com. All right, so let's talk about it. I don't want to beat around the bush. I don't want to be the guy who is not ignoring the fact that Tom Brady, what is going on? You know, he basically gets to play. He gets to play. He basically can suit up. The judge ruled in favor of the Patriots and then Tom Brady that he's allowed to basically do what he wants to do, go play. And, you know, good for him in that sense. I think Roger Goodell has taken a little bit of a pounding here. He has gotten beaten up for something I don't think it's really doing. I know, look, you have to make an example. And sometimes when you have to make an example of something, you have to be extreme about it. And in this sense, you know, I don't see anything wrong with Roger Goodell's rulings in this sense, because the only way you're going to learn is if you be extreme. If you have a child, if you are a parent, and all of a sudden your kid misbehaving, the only way they're going to get the point is if you discipline them and you have to take it to the extreme for them to make the point. And then after the point is made, then you can start lowering the level down. Look, I appreciate Goodell. Okay, I get it. I know what he's trying to do. I don't fully agree with all of the games he's trying to do. Like, I'm not sure if the Flakegate equals four games. Originally, Ray Rice had got four games. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to invite my good buddy, Little McElvin, who's part of the Back Sports Page family. I want him to – Little, I have to ask you, Roger Goodell, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of what he does. And hello, by the way. I'm a fan of what he's trying to do, okay? I get it. Sometimes you have to go to the extreme to make a point. Now, do you agree? Like, I feel that Brady should have got something, maybe one, two games at most. But you're sitting there telling me that, like, when Ray Rice punches his wife in the face and Adrian Peterson has his situation happen and when Greg Hardy has all this happen, it all equals four games. I don't know if the playing football is four games. Help me with this.
Well, let's be clear on Greg Hardy's position, though. He served a full-year suspension last year. So for him to be suspended a year plus games for this year, that's unheard of because I've never heard that with any other player. In terms of Tom Brady, he's the face of football, so we all know he wasn't going to get anything because if they were going to move on it, they would have not allowed him to play the Super Bowl. But we knew that they would allow them to do that and keep moving. I get what Goodell is doing. I think sometimes Goodell just, go overboard with the way he disciplines these players. I understand he's trying to have some sort of structure in football and not allow these young men to just make millions of dollars and just be able to be free and do what they want in terms of breaking laws and rules and just having some type of reputation. Good reputation for football because, again, young athletes, they look up to these guys. So when you have the Ray Rices who are punching their wives in the face or the situation that Hardy did or the situation that last year Peterson did, you know what I mean? Unfortunately for them, it's aluminized. However, it's everyday living. Parents spank their kids every day. Do you get suspended from your job for a whole year?
No, but I'm going to throw something else at you though, and you
What's
let
up?
Me know if you think I'm crazy, because 9 out of 10 times
well,
everybody does think I'm
well,
crazy.
Well, without you even saying what you're saying, I think you're crazy. Well, go ahead.
So glad to have you back on the show, Little. So glad to have you back on this show. Listen, I'm a firm believer. Like, and I had the same conversation with Amani Toomer last week on the show about fans and the, you know, the fact that they're fanatics and you know that, you know, they and they're role models to a point. But when did we get to a point that we care more about what they're doing on the field? Where did we get there? What?
Where? I'll tell you. I'm a parent.
When did we get there?
Okay, yeah. I'm a parent, right?
Okay.
Let's just say when we were growing up, our parents were more involved in teaching us how to be responsible young people growing up. Okay, now with social media and everything being, you know, in people's personal lives, now our parents, they take parenting off, you know, so now I don't have to teach my kids how to become this or be this because we have all this access to social media. So now when this one individual slip up, now we get to crucify him because, oh, my child looked up to you, when it should have been your job as a parent to make sure that your child knew what was right and what was wrong. So that's when we got to that point, when people decided to allow superstars to raise their kids versus them raising their kids themselves.
Right, but at the same time, then, that's not fair to the athletes.
Far from it, because we're all human.
Right, look, we're not for nothing.
I'm not saying, I'm just telling you at what point we got there.
Okay, no, that's fair. Like, I'm gonna bring up a point here. Like, I've met Ray Rice. I've sat and talked with the man for a good 25, 30 minutes, okay? And he's a good dude. He made a very bad decision. But how many people have we met in our lives make a really bad decision and they've gotten another opportunity? He made a really bad decision. He's paid his price. But the thing is, though, in the NFL player conduct policy, you have to be charged. You have to be, you know, you have to go through a legal trial, and when they, you know, officially get arrested and everything else like that, that is when the suspension comes down. He never got that part of it, and
okay,
he got banished
you
from
know,
the league. And now he's. Go ahead, Luke.
Unfortunately, social media influences decisions today. So, although be it there's rules and there's policies, the pressure from this video going viral, right? Although Goodell tried to act like, oh, I didn't see the video before I made a decision. Yeah, if he didn't personally see it, it came across the league's desk. So
yeah,
I say this. Because of the social media and the impact that social media has on everything in life today, that's why Ray Rice's decision was the way it went.
I want to get one more voice in on this. The co-owner of Back Sports Page, Seth Kamen. Seth, how are you tonight? Hello, Seth, are you there?
I guess Seth probably has us on hold. Yeah, he'll be back.
Yeah.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah, he'll be back.
I mean, I'll hang out. I'll fill in for Seth for a little while.
Listen, I appreciate you, Little, doing that. Look, again, the video came across this, and that was a very public pressure type of move. I get that, and I understand that. But that was last year, and now you're telling me that this guy is not able to get a job in the league because of something that, you know, again, it happened a year ago. I'm not sitting there saying it's okay to go punch your wife. Okay, I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying now he has paid his penalty, and he deserves to have another chance. But to say that Ray Rice is, for me to sit here and say that Ray Rice is the face of domestic violence in the National Football League is unfair, because it's a shame that right now that's how he's going to be remembered if his career ends today. No one's going to remember the millions of dollars that he has given to different charities and all the different kids he's helped. Okay? It's like, again, you're a parent, so you tell me. If your kids bring up Ray Rice, are you talking to them about the fact that he punched a woman in the face? Are you going to talk about the fact that he donated millions of dollars and helped Millions of kids get education.
I'm going to talk about the fact that Ray Rice, excuse me, is human. He's a man. Although the decision he made wasn't the right decision, every day in life we make decisions that aren't always the right decision, right? Let's go another direction with this, right? You're saying Ray Rice would now be the face of domestic violence, right? Now you have all,
In the NFL.
Now you have the league that has this whole anti-domestic violence, you know, program, and you have players speaking out on it, right? When this has been going on in the league for years, 4 years, all right? So now you look at a situation like Michael Vick, right, which will he'll be it. I don't care how many great things he did in football, he'll be forever known as the football player who killed dogs, right?
Correct.
This man went to Pittsburgh this year. Pittsburgh picked him up this year, right? And what happens? People want to ban him from football. When yet you have Ben, who on two counts was in court for statutory rape, no one's protesting against him.
Yeah. Right now you're
preaching. You
understand what I'm saying?
What happens is, and I say this because it is what it is. When you're a black male, you really have to walk a fine line, man, because you're not forgiven as easily as the white male. And killing dogs, I'm not saying killing dogs is right. However, we're all hypocritical because we wear leather. We wear minks. You know what I mean? So we're killing animals. We eat meat. So in our own way, we're doing that. However, what I'm saying is a dog's life means more to an individual than this man ruining young ladies' lives by forcing himself upon them sexually. That's okay, though.
No, it's not, though. That's my point. This is something that Imani and I talked about last week, though, where we sat there, we said, we have 95% of the guys in the league, maybe even more, maybe 98% of the players in the NFL are good dudes, and they do everything that they're supposed to do. And you like how I said dudes there? You're like, I made myself feel like I was one of them, like, yeah, you know, one of the dudes. Like, you know, it's one of those things where, look, 97% of these guys are good dudes, and they do everything they're supposed to do. They give back to the community, and they're outstanding individuals. Then you have the other 3% who are bad guys who've done, either made bad decisions or do stupid things. But because those 3% of the stupid things that they're doing stand out so much more, the whole league gets a black eye because of the 3%. And that's not
and you can't cover it up anymore, though. Only because social media makes everything visible. However, it's been the same way. But you know what it goes back to though, Randy? Again, now you got all these young guys coming up through the ranks doing this, right? Again, parenting. So when you teach your kids, right, and you continue to teach your kids, now you have these kids. Look at these Rutgers players, right, that just went through this whole situation, which means when you allow a kid to do so much growing up without any repercussions, without any punishment, without anything to it, there's a lack of discipline. There's a lack of self-control. So now they think that I can do whatever I want and get away with it. So now these behaviors continue. So when you get to this level of making millions, we can say it's a stupid decision. However, it's their behaviors, and their behaviors that they've been getting away with for so many years. Now, the only time they're punished for it is if it affects owners or colleges or any type of programs when making money. When it's putting their reputation in jeopardy, then and only then are these people punished. But if they can sweep it under the rug without anyone knowing, they allow it to keep going, man. Especially if they're a star player.
I'm not arguing that point at all. Real quick, let's talk about before we play the interview I did with Jeff Jarrett. I got to ask you. You and I are both football fans. I'm a Giants fan. You're a Cowboy fan. Opening week. Give me a quick thought on your Cowboys here, the losing DeMarcus Murray to Philadelphia. You know, you are a Cowboy fan in a giant world.
But listen, I honestly think that whole DeMarco Murray thing should have been handled a little differently. I think he should have been franchise tagged, and I think Dez should have been given his contract right away. Because now what happens is, although, and everyone keeps talking about this Dallas Cowboys offensive line, which is massive. We know this. However, chemistry also plays a part in this whole situation. That's why Emmitt Smith was able to do what he did for so many seasons, because of the chemistry he had with these guys. Now, these guys are good. They're big. They're strong. They are talented. Now, can Darren McFadden, Dunbar, and the other guys and the guy they just bought over from Seattle, now can these guys play behind that line? Because remember, in the beginning of the season, DeMarco wasn't running as strong as he was as the season went on. So just imagine if you would have kept him there with the chemistry that they've already built going into a new season when your team went 12-4. Their only issues were really the defensive side of the ball. So I would have held on to my offense. However, we have to see what happens, man. I'm thinking the Cowboys are in a real good place. We just have to check, because they've always been suspect in their defensive secondary.
If you're asking me if you're going to ask me from my perspective from the Giants standpoint, we only have a few minutes left in this show. I can't go that long with the amount of issues that team has. And this is coming from a Giant fan. But I've always said the team that has the fewest questions are usually the ones who are more successful. The Cowboys' biggest issue is keeping their defense off the field. That offensive line last year was able to do that. Okay? The Giants, you know, I was talking with a couple of beat writers over at practice, and I think they're saying, we were talking about the whole NFC East, and they're like, well, if Washington wins the division, this, and this has to happen. Way too many questions. Philadelphia, what are they going to get out of their quarterback? Can their line hold up? What are they getting out of their running back position now with Murray? How is their offensive line going to hold up and their defense and so on and so forth? And their changes, everything with Chip Kelly work itself out? So not as many questions there in Philadelphia. The Cowboys, you know, their question will be, you know, can their offensive line repeat the same performance they had last year? And what's going to happen over their running game? And, you know, and can you keep their defense off the field? Not many questions there for the Cowboys. Okay? For the Giants' perspective, what's going on with JPP? What's going on with JPP? Can the remade defense really come together under Steve Spagnuolo? What's going on with their running game? Can the offensive line come together? What's Eli's status going to be? Obviously the situation with JPP, like I just mentioned. You know, what's going on with Odell Beckham Jr.? Is Victor Cruz going to come back healthy? Way too many questions to say that they're going to win the division.
But I honestly think they're going to be okay, though. If they don't play,
I think they're going to be okay, too. But
if they don't play any games this season, they're going to play Sunday night. And I know you'll be in the box checking the game out and enjoying it. But it's definitely going to be. They always, and you can definitely gauge it off of Sunday's game, because they always play like a Super Bowl team against the Dallas Cowboys, because that's just one team they never want to lose to.
They asked me the other day, a lot of people have been asking me what my projection for the Giants have been. I originally was saying 5-8 wins. I'll go a little further and say maybe anywhere between 5 and 10 wins.
I'll give the Giants. I'll say they're going to be 9-7 this year.
You think the Giants are going to? You know what? As a Giant fan, I say thank you for your optimism, especially since you're a Cowboy fan.
I think they're going to be 9-7. Well, you know they have a lot of AFC games on their schedules this year. The NFC teams do. Because even the Cowboys play the Jets. And whoever put that schedule together, I thank them.
Well, the thing is, like, again, I'm talking with you. Real quick, Seth Kamen, before I go to the interview, Seth Kamen's back on the line. Seth, yes, I said five to ten wins. And I think that gives me enough leeway to say, oh, I was right at the end of the season.
Yeah, so either you're saying you're going to make the playoffs, you're going to be a top six pick. I mean, what the heck, Randy? Randy, why don't you just say from between 4 and 12 wins? That's a pretty big range.
I think that's a little too broad. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, like as much I'm trying to be an optimistic Giants fan, but I really do think this team has a lot of issues and a lot more what ifs to work through. And you know,
they're a disaster.
Yeah, it's going to be a real tough season if you're a Giants fan. Little's a Cowboy fan, so he actually is a lot more optimism in him. And if Romo can actually get to the playoffs and get to if he can get to a Super Bowl, okay, I think that stigma goes away. Now, this is the year he has to do it. Last year, he was getting he wasn't even getting the credit he deserved because Murray was carrying that offense. So well, this is going to be Romo's year. It's a sink or swim for him this year.
Romo never got the credit he deserved, but you're talking about a man who threw over 4,000 yards, who was always at least top five in quarterbacks in passer rating, yardage thrown, touchdowns thrown, and they just never seemed to respect the guy. You're talking about a guy who came off of 2 back surgeries last season and played a hell of a football season. The year prior to that, remember, he played with the back injuries, and the year prior to that, he played almost 4 games with cracked ribs. So that guy never gets enough credit, man. However, he's one of the toughest and actually he's a real good quarterback. He's definitely – Eli gets more credit than him because he won the big game. So Romo has to win. He knows that.
All right, and I'm going to ask you both one last question, and I expect to get beat up by both of you guys about this question, but you have to hear my point first. Eli, the year he won the second Super Bowl – and even going into the next season, came back from a fourth-quarter deficit a total of 11 games through the Super Bowl season and the season after. Do we discount him and not put him in the upper echelon of quarterbacks in this sense? Because he did do that. You know, he's not had an offensive line for the last 3 seasons since that happened. So are we not putting Eli Manning in there because he has not had an offensive line, or did he just, was just hot for a season and a half?
What do you say, Seth?
He's a good quarterback. He's never been a great quarterback in my mind, but he always does. He has, shown the ability to, to come up in big situations. And I know that's kind of a cop out. I wouldn't put him above either Rivers or Roethlisberger as a straight quarterback, but he led them to 2 Super Bowls. Last year when they had Beckham and Cruz, well, they didn't really have Beckham and Cruz together because Cruz got hurt so early. He's phenomenal. I think he's going to have a very good year. The problem isn't Manning, or the problem is everything else. He is a solid NFL quarterback that does well in big games. That's my feeling on him.
Well, I say every once in a while, even all of us have our prayers answered. And anyone who throws a football up like that consistently, he had a lot of prayers answered.
Okay. I mean, He also went to Green Bay and outplayed Favre in the AFC title game. He goes to Dallas, outplays Romo. I mean, look, he's made some incredibly stupid passes. He's made some incredibly lucky plays. Nobody disputes that. But at the end of the day, he did lead 2 drives for championships. He has done more than most. And, in New York, he kind of gets, you shake your head at him a little bit. But he's been a good – overall, he's been a good quarterback for them. And he's won them 2 championships. No. I'm not sure how any Giants fan can really complain.
I mean, he's going to do well this year, especially having Beckham and Cruz back. I mean, because Beckham is a monster. He's definitely a monster. And you have Cruz. As long as they put Cruz back in there, in his slot position, and not try to put him on the outside like they did last year, which to me caused that injury.
Yeah, I can't argue too much on that point. Guys, I'm against the clock here. Guys, thank you both for coming on. I have my interview tonight. We were playing the broadcast, the interview with Jeff Jarrett. It's going to go over. So for everyone who's listening, it's live and it gets cut off. Just please be patient for the download. and you guys can listen to the end of it, because I know it's not going to all take on this episode. So, guys, thanks for coming on. I'll talk to both of you guys during the week, and I'd love to have you guys on next week so we can discuss the Cowboy-Giant game and see how that turned out. So,
Let's go. Seth, first week in the NFL.
Yeah, and Seth, you know, Seth and Sean this Monday, 7 o'clock. Be there, be square.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right, that's Little McElvin and Sam. Seth came in. Really appreciate both of them stopping on. So here's our interview of the week brought to you by WWEShop.com. Hey, listen, if you're a fan of the WWE, you have to go to WWEShop.com. Get all your gear from John Cena to the late Roddy Piper to D-Generation X. Get all your WWE gear at WWEShop.com. And you get to save a couple bucks by putting in the promotional code BACKSPORTS. So check that out at WWEShop.com. So here's my interview with Jeff Jarrett, and it was really, really good. I hope you guys like it. Again, it's going to get cut off. So if you're downloading this, if this is not on Wednesday night and you download the show, there's no interruption. If you're listening live right now, there's going to be an interruption. I'm just giving you a heads up now, and just download the show and check it out. So this is my interview with Jeff Jarrett. Enjoy, folks. Enjoy it as much as I did doing it.
First off, I don't know if you know this, but you were actually my first interview when I entered the media business back when I was in college. So this is, to me, it's almost like a full circle type of thing right now.
How many years ago was that?
That was, you were still with the WWE back in 1999.
Wow, okay. No, there's a full circle.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess the first question I really have to do, I'll start now and I'll work my way back a little bit. Where did the concept of Global Force Wrestling come from?
Well, you know, I truly believe we always are the sum total of all of our parts, all of our experiences, you know, everything that's brought us to this point in life. And so, when I decided to resign from TNA, you know, it's not like I was getting out of the wrestling business by any stretch of the imagination. And so, piece by piece, I put these thoughts and ideas and concepts and vision together, and just over, you know, literally entire, you know, I took a couple of months off and really cleared my head and got a vision put together and started putting the pieces in place. Last April 7th was when I just announced the name of the company, and we started from that day forward spreading the name of the brand, Global Force Wrestling, and putting the partnerships together with New Japan, and AAA was actually the first partnership, and then all through Europe and South Africa and Australia. And so, you know, step by step, we just continue to create the brand awareness.
Did you approach this differently than you approached TNA?
Of course. I mean, one thing, it's 12 years later. So, like I said, a lot of life experiences inside TNA and outside TNA. So, you know, we change every day, and I'm certainly not the same person I was in 2002. And I don't want to be the same person I am today, you know, in 2020 or say. Looking at, you know, there was a couple of things that really jumped off the page. The one is technology, just how consumers, you know, viewers turn into consumers, and consumers, you know, is what drives your bottom line. And so how the viewers consume the program, programming, whether it be wrestling or any form of entertainment, it's just completely different. I mean, now you're looking at, you know, House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and some of the best TV shows. Let me just say, best shows that are not on television. They come through television, but it's not traditional cable. And so times have changed dramatically in the entertainment and the distribution world. I also believe the talent base. And there's no comparison. The talent base in 2015 in comparison to 2002, independent wrestling, the free agent market is red hot right now.
How does it feel now to sort of be just more of a behind-the-scenes guy and not as much as in the ring? Does that make a little bit easier for you in that sense?
Easy is probably not the right word. I have the ability to be more focused on the task at hand, you know, which is a great luxury. And I'm really enjoying you know, that side of things. Although I did have to wear, you know, two hats in newsprint. It wasn't near the pressure that it used to be. But, you know, I enjoy the promoting side. I enjoy putting the deals together. Obviously, it's much easier on the body. But you know, wrestling, I wrestled, this is my 28th year, but I'm happy that my wrestling, in-ring wrestling career is winding down, and that, you know, I'm Global Force Wrestling and sort of founder, promoter of that, and very excited about what 2015 is going to bring.
What have you learned from the business side from your father?
Him and my grandmother always preached fundamentals, basics, learn the business inside and out, every facet of it that you possibly can. Both of them were big teachers, big believers in that. And my dad, you know, he was much like any promoter of his time. You know, you get good versus evil in many shapes, form, and fashion, but don't complicate things. Don't complicate matters. You know, just like the UFC fight the other night, it's a real easy situation when you put two different guys with lightning personalities, and you put them in the ring together. You're going to make some magic.
Are you surprised, basically, because when you were with WWE during that run, until about 99, and then you went back over to WCW. And when WCW went out of business, you really sort of saw the boom even more of the internet, and social media, of course, came in quite a few years later. How much has the internet and social media changed this industry?
It's changed the industry just like it's changed television shows, it's changed sporting events. It's a running social commentary that I believe has been very beneficial to the wrestling industry in that, and that's one thing at Global Force that we're looking to expand on, in that we want to bring the wrestling communities, the different wrestling fan bases from AAA and New Japan and all around the world, bring them together as a community to talk about what they like, what they don't like, because wrestling fans are pros at that. They'll tell you what they don't like, and that's a healthy side of the business.
I interviewed Jim Ross the other day, and we discussed the fact that you guys were able to put differences aside and work together for the first time in years. How important, from a wrestling promoter, to be able, especially doing a startup wrestling company like this, to have names who have experience like Jim Ross, and also having talent in the ring that already has some name value to work with some of the younger guys? How important is that?
It's at a premium. It's very important. You know, getting Jim to be a part of our very first event that we executive produced, specifically it being a Japanese product that needed English commentary to work. What better guy could Jim? You know, could we have gotten it? It didn't exist. Jim was the best. Is the best of the best of the best, and it showed on the broadcast that time. I mean, you know, I'm still getting tweets about guys. Fans that are watching it on the replay schedule, and it's one comment after another how much they just enjoy JR and Matt Stryker. And so, you know, being recognizable talent is always important. I don't care if it's a movie, a sitcom, you know, Kevin Spacey in House of Cards, he's a phenomenal actor that has had multiple major motion picture roles. And so for him to get... it's very important to answer your question.
I'm guessing that you like House of Cards because it's been referenced quite a bit here.
it is on the top of my mind because I've read a blog on it this morning, and it is a good show. It's very good.
You know, if you like that show...
Do you watch it, just by the way?
I do. I've watched a couple episodes. I'm catching up on it because everyone told me how good Kevin Spacey was, and sadly, with my schedule, I don't get... And I just got done with Newsroom. That was the last one I just got done with.
Well, you're probably like me. I don't get to watch, you know, if it's not a sporting event, not a lot of TV time for myself.
Are you a Tennessee sports fan down there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We didn't have much of a year, but thank goodness the Predators are red hot right now. So the Titans had a bad year, but the Preds are tough. They're that new coach, new system, new energy. This town is buzzing with Predator mania.
Well, also you have the Grizzlies are down in Memphis as well, and they do an excellent job. I'm an NBA writer first, so for me.
Okay, well, basketball is my first love. So yes, Memphis is right down the road. I did an interview going into Wrestle Kingdom 9 with the voice of the Memphis Grizzlies, and they just had a triple overtime game against San Antonio. So yeah, Memphis, and they've got a good infrastructure, a good front office. They got a good organization, great organization.
They're my pick to go to the finals because of the move they just made, bringing Jeff Green in. Yeah, they're fun. They're a fun team to watch, and they have to keep Gasol. That's gonna be their key.
Yeah, I agree.
Boy, this got off track. Went right off the rails, but that's okay. What do you think of the product now? Where wrestling has gone? From where it was about 10 years ago with the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars and everything that has gone through, how has the product changed for the good and the bad? What do you think how the product is like now overall?
Well, in the Attitude Era, it was WWF at that time and WCW, and those were obviously a major two. You know, New Japan obviously existed, but. You know, that's sort of almost social media days and the internet, and that, you know, internet is there, but not near as big as it is now. So how has it changed? Now, you know, the wrestling fan is well aware of AAA and Triple Mania. Do they get a chance to see it? Not yet, but, you know, that's on the way. But you've also got New Japan. You've got independent promotions, not just literally all around the globe. You've got Ring of Honor. You've got some different independent promotions. So there is the business is very, very healthy from that standpoint. Obviously when Vince fought the competition, and then, you know, for a couple of years TNA got rocking and rolling, and then, you know, that situation happened with those guys, and so. But, you know, it's a different business than it was in the 90s, completely different business. And obviously, the programming, you know, WWE has stood up and said it very proudly, but, you know, their programming model and the corporate sponsors and John Cena is, you know, carrying that banner, and hats off to the guy because, you know, the corporate money that he brings in and the WWE, you know, with the corporate sponsorship. So the business has a much, much better image than it did in the 90s.
You know, you mentioned, you know, the way the product was. I asked this question to Booker T. I didn't have a chance to ask it to Jim Ross because I know he was very close to it. You knew Chris Benoit. How much did that situation affect the industry as a whole?
That's hard to say. I would have to say that is on a case-by-case basis because the people that knew Chris knew that wasn't, you know, that certainly wasn't the Chris that we, you know, knew. Certainly, I can only speak for myself personally. You know, that wasn't the Chris Benoit that I knew, and obviously something terrible happened, and demon possessed, and you just, it's incomprehensible. But how did it affect the business? You would almost have to say, ask it on a fan in a case-by-case basis, and a corporate world in a case-by-case basis. Obviously, it was a huge negative. But for me to sit in my office and try to make a determination on the overall business, how it affected it, I really can't say.
What is your relationship now, since you left WWE? Have you had any conversations with Vince? Just, you know, not even to do some business, but just sort of get back on, you know, if there was any bad terms, just to get back on good terms?
But yeah, I mean, multiple conversations over the years, non-wrestling related, is all I'll say. His family's been in the wrestling business for about the same length of time. They've probably been in a little bit longer, but, you know, my grandmother got into business back in the 40s, and his grandfather probably was in the business before that. So, you know, we've been in this industry. It's who and what we are, this industry.
I know you probably get this question a lot, and, you know, when I do my interviews, I try to read the last few interviews the subject has done, so I try not to ask the same questions, but I guess I have to ask the question, what made you want to fold up your time with TNA? What made you want to move on? Because that was your baby for a long time. And what made you want to move on?
There was, you know, there's nothing to read between the tea leaves. My time had come to an end there, and I knew it. And it was time to close that chapter in my life and move forward and do something different. Very happy and grateful and thankful for my years at TNA, but it was without a doubt time for me to move on and do something different.
I loved the early days of TNA. I loved the fact that you guys had got, you know, young guys like AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and Petey Williams, and you know, you had the Team Canada and, you know, Bobby Roode. Those guys, that made it so much fun for me, and to, because it gave you that alternate. That alternate to the WWE at that time. And me personally, and this is one person's opinion, when you guys got on Spike, it felt like it was just so quick. Within 3 years, you guys went from starting in 2002 to being on TV in 2005. Not a lot of promotions. It took Paul Heyman, God knows how long, to get ECW on national television. What kind of work behind the scenes was it to try and get a TV deal like that?
It was get up every morning, put your feet on the floor, and go to work, and try to, like any business, grow your revenues. And in the wrestling business, to grow revenues, you got to grow your fan base first, and you've got to earn your fans one at a time. And that's, you know, that was my mindset then, and that's my mindset now. That, you know, you have to create brand awareness. You have to have bring a product to the marketplace at the right time, where the people not only understand it, but they're entertained by it, they enjoy it, and they want to get emotionally invested in it. And there are so many options out there today. You truly have to do it on a step-by-step process, because there's so much competition out there for people's time. Video games, streaming shows, cable television shows, network shows, concerts, tours, YouTube is an entertainment channel. Vine. Instagram, you know, it's all time consumption. So to break into the marketplace, you really have to do a very simplistic yet methodical approach of growing your fan base. And then that's what we did then, and that's what I'm doing now.
Do you, looking back at your wrestling career, do you have any favorite matches off the top of your head that you consider like your top five?
I've answered this question many times over the last 3 months, just did different rounds of media, and you know, it's pretty much what I, because I get the same answer because it's the truth. You know, in my early years, I had a series of matches with Jerry Lawler, my partner, and against, that I really enjoyed, and then there was when I first went to the WWF, there was some singles and tag matches that involved me and Road Dogg and Shawn Michaels and Scott Hall. That I really enjoyed, and then, you know, WCW, my world title matches, were obviously some of my favorite. We got to wrestle Flair and some different guys on my world title runs, and then just the last couple years ago, I had a series of matches against Kurt Angle that I think are some of the very best of my career. Very proud of them. So those are the top I like.
So you told me that you also loved House of Cards. What are some of the other shows when you have the opportunity to watch television that you like?
It truly is a sporting event. Karen got me into House of Cards. We were on a plane ride over to Tokyo, and it was one of the options. And she said, "You got to watch this." And all of a sudden, I watched, oh gosh, 6 or 7 episodes of season one. So I hadn't watched any. She's watched it since we got home. She's watched all the episodes. So, but you know, it's just, I love sports. I'll watch almost any type of sporting event. Love it. Baseball, I mean, not baseball, basketball, football, college, pro. You know, I'm a big sports guy.
You have a pick for the Super Bowl?
Boy, that game Sunday would be the Packers. I was hoping for a Packers break, but with Russell Wilson coming back like that, I think it would be really hard to go against him. But when you look on the other side of football, and you've got Belichick, and you got Brady, I'll go Patriots.
You go Patriots? Okay. I just hope they don't deflate the footballs before the game.
Exactly. That's a big buzzword today. It's the Patriot game or something they're saying on all those talk shows.
If Jeff, if you had the opportunity to work with any talent in pro wrestling right now, who do you think it would be, as far as in ring?
Oh gosh, I think AJ Styles is coming off probably the best year in his career. He's really at the top of his game. To go back on Wrestle Kingdom, I mean, when you look at that card from top to bottom, execution, and Nakamura and his ring presence and then his physical aggressive style, and then in the main event, Tanahashi and Okada, those guys are the best wrestlers in the world at this time, and they just proved it on that grand stage. It was really mesmerizing to watch, especially those last three matches.
This is a tough question, but I ran into Bret Hart a couple of weeks back, and I asked him to give me his best Owen Hart story. Can you give me an Owen Hart story?
Well, you know, I get asked that quite often on these interviews, and I like to let others tell Owen Hart funny stories. I could tell you, we could talk from now till this time next week on funny Owen Hart stories or ribs or day-to-day just stuff that he would have you cracking up. But I like to, every chance I get, to remember Owen on the man that he was, the family man, a guy that had more integrity than I've seen. And, you know, I was proud to call him one of my best friends in the business. I was proud to call him at one time my tag partner. And so I like to remember Owen that way. You know, he's got two kids, OG and Athena, and I want them to remember their dad just the utmost respect and just how much Owen Hart was respected throughout the industry.
I'll give you, I met Owen Hart when I was 16, and I think you'll appreciate this story. I was at a hotel in Virginia. I was there for a school trip, and when I walked over to him and I asked him for his autograph, and I asked him who he wrestled that night at the show, and he told me he wiped the mat with the Ultimate Warrior. And I was like, okay, so I guess he won. I'm 16. I don't really know any better because I was there for a school trip. Later on that week, when tape training was so big, I got a copy of the tape from that house. So someone did a handheld, and Warrior beat him within 35 seconds.
That's Owen.
Yeah, and the funny part was Owen was trying to sit there with a scowl on his face every single time people came up with autographs, and every time like someone walked away because they thought he didn't want to say no, he actually was chasing them so he can give them an autograph. So that says how much, you know, how much of a playful guy he was. And since you know, I know how close you guys were, so I figured you would appreciate that story. But
yeah, I love it. That's Owen persona. Those little things when he told us he was a 64-year-old kid, you would have never known the difference had you not had that. So it was truly a harmless statement. But he probably said that, and probably everybody around him that who worked the show got a giggle out of it. Because they knew what had really happened. But yet Owen says it with that deadpan face. And you as a 16-year-old and as a kid, oh, that's great. Congrats, Owen.
And that's exactly what I said. I was like, oh, congrats. Warrior's not an easy guy to beat. So, what messages do you have to wrestling fans now for both, you know, to what to look forward to for Global Force Wrestling and the growth of the industry right now?
Well, for Global Force Wrestling, we're very excited. And I took this Wednesday morning to do media. I've got to meet, you know, meetings and conference calls, and really excited about the announcements that are going to be coming up in the next 60 to 90 days. You know, again, growing the brand. Stay tuned. We appreciate all the support, the overwhelmingly positive feedback on the New Japan, you know, the show, looking at putting deals together like that. And that's what we're in the process of doing. So stay tuned. GFW is going to continue our rollout. And then I think your part two of your question was just the wrestling fans in general or the business as a whole?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can look around and you see New Japan and New Japan World and them on Access Television and Mauro Ranallo and Josh are doing just a phenomenal job. You got Lucha Underground and AAA, very, very exciting. Ring of Honor, it's back to pay-per-view world in a couple of months. WWE, and it's WrestleMania season. The wrestling business is very healthy, and I'm very excited to be a part of it. And feel very blessed that in 2015, January, that what the future holds for the wrestling fan, because it's been no secret my family has been in this business over 7 years, so the wrestling fan has, quote-unquote, put groceries on our table, fed us for many, many years, and so I'm grateful. And I'm an enormous wrestling fan myself, so I'm excited for the wrestling fan.
As a fan, you know, as a media member and a fan, I can't remember a time where, you know, they say that, you know, WWE put all their competition out of business. Well, I really don't really see that, because there's other stars, you know, there's other companies. Yeah, they're not at the stage that WCW was when they were competing with Vince, but there's still a lot of independent groups out there that have a lot of very good homegrown talent. And like you were saying with Global Force, and, you know, with, of course, with TNA and, you know, Ring of Honor, you know, some of those stars that were in some of those companies are now stars with WWE. So it's, you know, you never know where the next big star is coming from. So that's what makes some of these smaller groups much more entertaining and more fun.
Yes, and that's what's exciting. I mean, just what you said. The opportunities are going to. Who knows what the future holds? But you're right. Where is the next household name truly coming from? There's a lot of options today.
Okay,
All right, that was it. Me, Jeff, Jarrett, we sat there for 26 minutes and just shot the breeze. I hope you guys liked it. That was, like, again, one of my really, really good favorite interviews. I didn't realize how long ago we taped it. We had Super Bowl questions going on, but I think that was right around before or right around after. So, again, that's months and months and months ago as we're getting ready to start the NFL season. But this was a little bit more recent, and we did a really good interview. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did doing it. I don't know why I put this show for 45 minutes, so the live audience cut off about halfway through, right around the Chris Benoit question. The guys who are downloading this and listening to this right now, thank you guys very much for making me a part of your week. I'm glad that you guys love listening to this show, downloading it, listening to the guests that I have on. It's a pleasure for me. So thank you very much. New episode of Real Sports Talk Radio drops next week. A couple more surprises coming up, and plus more with the NFL. So, see you guys next week. Thanks for taking the time to download.